Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammaker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Jillian Dare by Melanie M. Jeschke. They're from two different worlds. Can love unite them? Things are looking up for Jillian Dare. She's left her Shenandoah Valley foster home behind and is striking out on her own. Thrilled to land a job as a nanny at a large country estate in the rolling foothills of Virginia, she's enthralled with the beauty of her new home. Her young charge, Cadence Remington, is a delight, and Jillian even has the opportunity for frequent travel to the Remington family castle in England. It's almost too good to be true. Just as Jillian begins to feel at home, she meets her handsome but moody employer, Ethan. In spite of herself, Jillian realizes she might be falling for her boss. But how can a humble girl with no connections ever hope to win a successful entrepreneur from a wealthy family? And what dark secrets from the past is he hiding?
Hi, and welcome to this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hammaker, and I'm so glad you joined me. Today, my guest is Melanie Jeschke. She is the author of The Oxford Chronicles, an historical romance series, and she also has Jillian Dare, which is a retelling of Jane Eyre, her romantic suspense book. So thanks for being on my show, Melanie.
Thanks for having me.
So now you have the historical romance series, and then you have your romantic suspense. So what made you decide to switch to romantic suspense?
Well, I was actually inspired by an author named Deborah White Smith, who did some updated versions or modern retellings of Jane Austen books. A while back, I think it was for Harvest House, I'm not sure, but I read her books. I love Jane Austen, and so I was like, oh, I could do this. I could update this. And with one of my favorite classics, which is Jane Eyre. So it just, I got inspired, and I love the whole gothic suspense thing that goes on in Jane Eyre, and I thought, oh, that it could easily be reset to today. So. That was my inspiration.
Yeah, my girls, they had to read Jane Eyre in high school, one of their high school lit classes, and neither one of them liked it. And I love Jane Eyre.
Really?
Yeah, I loved Jane Eyre as a kid. It was like a knife to the mother's heart. They were like, Jane Eyre. I said, why you don't like it? They're like, nothing happens. It just, I'm like, oh, what have I done?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I guess they'll just have to read my book, and then they'll be inspired to go back and read Jane Eyre, right?
I was just thinking that, Melanie. I said, yes. I said, I think they might enjoy that better. I mean, they have liked other classics. I don't mean to ditch my teenage girls, and I get it. I had friends of mine who didn't like Jane Eyre, but I was a kid in eighth grade reading it for fun. And trying not to cry, you know, I finished my other work going, Helen died, what? And all sorts of stuff. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so I can see why you viewed it as for the challenge to bring it into the modern day, because the themes they're so timeless. The themes of
they
it.
They really
and,
are. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So
it's got the whole mystery gothic thing going on, and you know, the mad woman in the attic. How do you translate that to today? So it was kind of a fun challenge. I mean, it was like the plot's there for me, but how to adapt it was the challenge, and it was just fun. It was a fun book to write. Sometimes when you're doing the historical fiction thing, it's a bit of a slog because you have to do so much research, and this was just more, it was interesting and entertaining to work on, so.
Yeah, and so what did you find was the hardest part to add that suspense? Like you said, I mean, the framework is there. I mean, the suspense is kind of in the story, but you still have to bring it to modern times. You don't have the, mad woman locked in the attic and people traveling for days to get places and... those kind of the conventions that can so easily create the tension, you know, more than 100 years ago.
Yeah. I don't know. It just sort of, things just came to me. Like, well, it could be instead of cackling, laughing, she's getting threatening emails. Or I did kind of bring in The Woman in White, so I sort of alluded to another literary work from the same period that's also a gothic suspense book. So I brought in the new, at the time when I wrote it, Andrew Lloyd Webber's Woman in White was still appearing in London theater, so I kind of brought that into it through the making the woman be an actress and just different things like that. But I think that there was one point where I sort of was at a standstill because I wanted to translate it. I said some of it here in Virginia because I just thought it would be fun to set it on in a state, like in Fauquier County.
Mm-hmm.
But then I wanted to go to the castle thing in England. So I had Mr. Rochester character. I made his name Ethan Remington. So I had him be a wealthy telecommunications owner who owned a castle in England from his family, but then also, you know, this estate in Virginia. So they go back and forth. But once I was like, okay, it's time to go to the castle, you know, for some of the real creepy stuff to happen. And I had this moment where I had ended a chapter saying she had no idea what was in store for her, you know, at Keswick Hall or this castle. And in my mind, I'm like, I have no idea what's in store for her at this castle. That is the truest statement I've ever made in this book. So, you know, it was a little more of a challenge. It's like, okay, now what? How am I going to do this? So anyway, but it was still fun, you know, just to figure it out. I know that purists don't like that. A lot of like, oh, you know, how could you take this classic and try to update it? But I always enjoy it when other writers do it. I enjoy seeing how they figure it out, you know, and the more familiar you are with the work, then you can kind of see how they're playing with it. So for me, it's fun. So that was one goal, was to just for those people that enjoy it. But then for people mm-hmm. that have never read Jane Eyre, like your daughters or who hated it, you know, maybe they would read my book and want to go back and read the classic. So.
Right. And I think that is, I mean, like you said, you know, people have done it with Jane Austen. People have done it with fairy tales, even, you know, go back and, read you the Fast Minute. That's a very popular, I guess it's a subgenre. I don't know if it's its own genre or not, especially for young adult YA books things like that. So it is interesting to see, you know, how people are playing with things like that, or even taking, you know, there's even been books written about like famous people as part of a mystery series or solving crime.
Oh yeah. Right.
Those kind of things.
Jane Austen.
Yeah. I don't think I like that as much as I like the redoing of the books. I can't suspend my disbelief too much, but some of them are done well enough that I enjoy them. But, it is kind of like, do you have any other classics that you're eyeing to retell with a modern romantic suspense spin to them?
Not yet, but that's a good question. So, but not yet, not on my horizon. But that would be kind of fun, actually. You know, one of my favorite romantic suspense books, which is Rebecca by Daphne du Maurier.
Mm-hmm.
I just love that book. And that really is also a kind of retelling in many ways of Jane Eyre. So, and I've noticed recently that some other authors have played with both Jane Eyre and with Rebecca and trying to update both of them. So,
yeah,
kind of interesting. So it's just an interesting storyline, I think, that somehow resonates with people even, you know, generations later.
Right. I know there was a recent movie adaptation of Rebecca that was more updated, and Jane Eyre has been done in the movies like a million times, some of them better than others. So we're not going to have to go down that rabbit hole of of that, but it is kind of interesting. So besides we've established that we love the classics, but do you have any favorite modern romantic suspense writers that you enjoy reading or like following their work?
Well, I think at this point I'm supposed to say Sarah Hammaker is like my favorite.
No, I wasn't fishing at all.
But I'm a little more old school, I think. I so admire Daphne du Maurier, and I read many of her books when I was younger. And then also, she's also old school, but Mary Stuart. I love Mary Stuart. And plus, she did her own retellings of the whole Arthurian legends, which I loved those books. They were really, not just a teenager, but then as an adult, I just love her books. So I'm a little more old school in terms of that. I'm frankly, Sarah, I get scared myself. So if it's too intense, I don't like women being threatened and, the really intense kind of suspense.
Mm-hmm.
So I tend to be a little more old school and more cozy romantic suspense, if
yeah.
that makes sense. Or just kind of classic, but gothic kind of thing where you don't take it too seriously. So,
yeah, I was going to say, it was both of those authors. Yeah, Mary Stuart. I've read many of her books when I was younger as well. And Daphne du Maurier, I mean, who could go wrong with her? They are very more gothic in their, mm-hmm. In the romantic suspense, but still very suspenseful, I think. Maybe more of a slow burn build as opposed to a lot of action, which, has its charms
right.
as well. I mean, they're just different kinds of reading. Sometimes I love the slowness of it, and sometimes I want a lot of action really quick. It just depends on... If I'm at the beach, I want a lot of action really quick, so I have a slow burn,
yeah,
I'm falling asleep
funny.
And burning on the beach. So,
right.
Got to keep me awake, keep me going. Yeah, so it is... but it's nice that, there are, modern authors, I think, who kind of fulfill that slower pace, a little less action, but still in the romantic. And, of course, I can't think of any off the top of my head now, but I know they're out there because I've read them. But what do you think are some of the ways that you ensure your books are accurate? You talked about your historical research for that. But for your modern books, what kind of research did you have to do with Gillian Dare?
Well, I actually didn't do much in the research department for Gillian Dare. I did have a friend. This is a re-release. So I had a friend who pointed out some things that I should change that weren't entirely accurate. They just had to do with wardrobe or, it was
yeah.
very interesting. The things she caught that my editor didn't catch. So I did change those details. I was like, oh, okay, sure. I didn't have to do as what I did do was I researched just the setting for the castle part, which I had been to a castle in England, Leeds Castle, that was my inspiration for my castle for Gillian Dare. So I went back over the layout of that castle and the grounds and that sort of thing. And then I sort of created my own interior of it. So I drew out my own schematic of where the rooms were located, how it was designed. But originally I based it on a real castle. So, and that castle is the picture on the new cover for the re-release. They use that castle as the background. So that was the most research I did, honestly. My main research was just so getting into Jane Eyre, like rereading it, re-listening to it, rereading it, watching every version out there. That was my main research, was the original Jane Eyre story and plot. Because I tried really to be faithful, even though my books like half the size of Jane Eyre because I cut out all the young part of it. But just to try to, I really wanted to be faithful and give a real homage or homage to the original.
Yeah, and I think that that is, I mean, you know, because the original, like we talked about before, you know, is so rich and full. I think you could really, you know, really manage to do that. And I think my listeners will, they're going to have to go get a copy now and see how you did that. And you know, because it, I think it is, it should be very gothic and suspenseful, and that can just make a really fun read. And I know that you're an adjunct professor of English. You have all those grandchildren to play with. So how do you find time to write these days? What does that look like for you these days?
Yeah, so it really does depend on what's going on with that part of my life. If I'm teaching, I don't write, honestly. And that's why I have not written as much in recent years, because I've been so involved in my academic pursuits. So it's kind of an in and out thing. So like it's summertime now. I'm not teaching, so I'm hopefully going to be more serious about writing. Although I've been working on this re-release and just going through the manuscript again and polishing up some things and changing some things. So when I'm teaching, I'm not writing. Honestly, I don't know how C.S. Lewis and Tolkien did it. I honestly don't. But now that when I had kids, my writing slot of time was after they went to bed. So I'd sit down at the computer around 10 o'clock at night and just write for a couple hours every night. I would think during the day while I was folding laundry, you know, and envisioning scenes and that kind of thing. So that was my schedule then. Now I'm better at in the mornings. I'm fresher. I don't have to worry about little ones, and I can, you know, have my cup of coffee and sit down and do my writing in the morning, and then take a break for lunch and write early afternoon. And that's, I tend to kind of stick to that schedule when I'm in book, so to speak, and really working hard on something.
Yeah, that's very inspiring. I'm lucky if I get, you know, an hour before in the early morning before my day starts. But hey, you know, one day I too will have
yeah,
a little more
so like
time.
I say, that's sporadic. That's like the ideal. And that, but when, if, like I say, like last semester I taught, so I didn't do anything. So
yeah.
It all depends on where I am in my schedule or whatever. And the ideal is that's the ideal. Like,
you
know, just spend the day writing. And I love to do that every day, but it doesn't happen.
Yeah. Well, we all have ideals, and sometimes we achieve them, and sometimes we just dream about them, and that's fine.
Yeah.
So,
it's like one day.
One day. But keep going. Keep working on it. And unfortunately, we're out of time. I'd love to talk some more, but we're out of time today.
Right.
So, but thank you for being on my show, Melanie.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
You've been listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hammerker, and today I've been chatting with Melanie Jeske. She's the author of The Oxford Chronicles and a reinterpretation of Gillian Dare. And stay tuned, and you can listen to an excerpt from Gillian Dare after this.
Now an excerpt from Gillian Dare by Melanie M. Jeske. I slept fitfully for about an hour, my dreams haunted by suddenly appearing apparitions who would awake me with a start. Around midnight, a beeping sound roused me, and I sat straight up in bed. I threw off my covers and ran through the nursery sitting room to Cadence's room, where she was sleeping soundly. The beeping grew louder and more insistent. It sounded like a smoke detector. I needed to wake Mr. Remington. I quickly went to open the door leading to his study, but withdrew my hand from the doorknob with a cry. The door was burning hot. I tried the hallway door. It was cool to the touch. I opened it and then, shutting it behind me, raced down the hall to Mr. Remington's bedroom. I pounded on the door, shouting, "Mr. Remington! Mr. Remington!" Not waiting for his reply, I shoved the door open. Smoke poured into his bedroom from the open study door, where I could see flames devouring his desk. "Mr. Remington!" I screamed. "Wake up! There's a fire!" He lay on his bed, senseless, perhaps overcome by the fumes. I shook him furiously. "Mr. Remington! Ethan! Get up!" I pleaded. "Ethan!" His eyes popped open with a look of curious surprise.
"Jillian?"
"Quick! Get up! There's a fire!" He leapt up. I ran out into the hallway and grabbed a fire extinguisher. I had passed it many times before without consciously noticing, but its presence had now come to my mind with vivid clarity. Covering my mouth and nose with one hand, I rushed back into his room. Mr. Remington had yanked down some drapes and was beating the flames on his study desk. I aimed the extinguisher and smothered the rest with thick foam. Between us, we managed to quench the fire. Panting and coughing, we viewed the damage. His beautiful cherry desk and credenza were blackened, his computer melted, and stacks of files and papers reduced to ashes.
"The baby!"
he suddenly cried. He pulled on the connecting doorknob and yelped with pain. Using a drape to protect his hand, he gingerly opened the door and then rushed to her crib.
"Thank God,"
he murmured, gathering her in his arms. He looked at me then.
"Jillian, are you all right?"
I realized I must have been quite a sight, my long hair lung loose down to my waist. I wore a t-shirt top and plaid flannel pajama bottoms, but then he was also dressed for bed, wearing only pajama pants.
"Are you all right?"
he repeated. I caught myself staring at him.
"Yes,"
I replied, glancing down at my bare feet.
"But you..."
I tried to turn the attention from myself.
"Your hand, did you burn it on the door?" "The door. Thank God I put in those fire doors. The baby, when I think what could have happened to her."
He hugged her more tightly.
"Did you burn your hand?" "It's nothing. I'll put some ice on it and it'll be fine. First, let's move Cadence to your room, all right? Is there any smoke in there?"
"No, I don't think so."
"Good. Here, take her,"
he said, handing her over almost reluctantly. "I'll move her crib."
"I'll wake up the Browns to help you." "No, don't. I don't want to alarm anyone. I can manage."
He began to pull on the crib and then winced.
"Wait," I said. "I'll help you. Let me put Cadence in my bed first."
I quickly carried her into my room and laid her on her back in the center of my bed, barricading her in with pillows. Mr. Remington was tugging the crib with one hand. I slipped over to the opposite side and pushed it into my room.
"There."
I gently transferred Cadence back to the crib, taking care not to wake her.
"Now let me see your hand."
I took his hand in mine and examined his palm.
"You have some blisters forming. Run some cold water on it before it gets worse."
I turned on the faucet over my wash basin and let the water run.
"I'll go get some ice. There's a mini fridge in the bar in the dining room, isn't there? Maybe there's some ice in there."
"No," he commanded, as he thrust his injured hand into the cold water. "I'll get it. There's something I need to check on anyway." He dabbed the burn gingerly with a towel.
"Jillian, I need you to stay here alone with the baby for a little while. Lock all the doors, the connecting door to the nursery, too. If you hear or see anything amiss, call down to the gatehouse. Understand?"
I nodded and locked the doors behind him. I sat and waited for what seemed hours, but by the clock was little more than 30 minutes.
During that time, I recalled all the details of the fire. I began to shake from the trauma and the cold. Finally, I heard him softly call my name, and I jumped up to unlock the door and let him in.
"Everything all right?"
he asked. I nodded weakly, clasping my arms to my chest to control the shaking.
"Sit down," he ordered. "My word, what's wrong? You're cold? Or is it shock? Here."
He took off the leather jacket he had donned over his pajamas and placed it around my shoulders. He knelt beside me and looked me in the eyes.
"Are you all right, Jillian? You aren't hurt?"
"No, I'm fine."
"I'm sorry to have left you so long. Tell me, do you have any idea how the fire started? Did you see anyone or hear anything?"
"Just the smoke detector beeping. I was having trouble sleeping anyway. Was there fire anywhere else? Is everyone else all right? What about Mr. Cole?"
"Calvin is fine. He's on the other corridor, so he didn't hear anything. I talked to Doug Crook, the night porter, and he's doing a sweep of the castle now."
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.